good day to you, and welcome to a Christmas edition of the Crossbox Podcast.
You can tell by the music.
Exactly. Great music, Jay. Thank you. Good job.
You're welcome.
But yeah, it's that time here, that time when we say yippee-ki-yay, motherfuckers, and we proceed to look through our Christmas wish lists.
That is correct. Maybe not that time of year for us in this thing. This is the first one of these we've done, but...
Well, yeah, but it's a tradition now, because we've said it is.
Okay, so next year.
Exactly. This is traditional to go through our wish list. We've got wish lists for games that we would like to see, guns we would buy if we could, and we're sitting on a giant pile of money, and defense projects that we would love to get for our alter ego countries if they were somehow things that one could buy.
Yes.
Ever.
So, we're going to kick things off with games, because those are the most attainable things on this list.
By some
are. The ones that are real, at least.
Yes.
But that might be giving away the game. Would you care to kick off?
Sure. All right, so, first game I would like a Star Wars X-Wing game, new, to be made by Volition's Free Space team. If you've played Free Space 2... It really felt like they were dying to get their hands on the Star Wars license, but just couldn't swing it. And I'm pretty sure Volition's gone now. But Free Space 2 is a wonderful space flight sim if you like the combat side. It's got a solid story, an excellent space flight mechanics, and really, it just needs X-Wings and TIE Fighters.
It has also been modded out the wazoo, although not to my knowledge with a Star Wars mod.
But yeah, we'll look into that.
You can fly your Battlestar Galactica Viper if you want to.
That you can. Also, Craft from Babylon 5.
Hmm.
So, you know, there's a ton of mods out there for it. It's a really wonderful community.
Yes.
And so I highly recommend Free Space 2, but I would like a new one with nicer graphics
and Star Wars.
Actual X-Wings.
Yeah.
Second game on my list, again, I'm going to take same idea. I want a Star Wars Bounty Hunter game, but I want it to be made by Naughty Dog. Naughty Dog, of course, made The Last of Us, and they also made the Uncharted games. They do a really great job with story, with action-adventure, and the only thing that could make it better is if they had the license for Boba fucking Fett. So, Boba Fett, jetpacks, Naughty Dog, possibly some sass.
Most likely some sass.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't think it's possible for them to make a game without sass. So they're going to put it all together and just package that and put a bow on it. All right. So, finally, I would really like a dynamic Vietnam flight sim. Dynamic campaign and all your favorite Vietnam era jets. Because I think that's like about the era when you last had to make significant compromises in engineering of planes.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the Phantom, which is big and powerful and turns like a rhino. And you have the Crusader, which turns much better and has guns that work.
Well, more or less.
Ish. Well, it has guns. they don't work. And you have the F-105, if you must. And I will say the F-105 looks good. Like, it's got
more
like nice
less,
lines.
It sounds a little bit like skinny for me.
Interesting. All right, fair enough.
Yeah.
You know, we can both agree though, the A6 Intruder is ugly.
Yes.
It looks like dinner. It's a drumstick.
Well, it's a lot of like Navy attack planes. They don't have a great record of looking especially pretty, do they?
No, I mean, you got to cram the thing on like an elevator and fold its wings and make it haul a lot of stuff and get it to land in a short distance.
I should note, John had a book on his table about the A7.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my remark on it. Was the A7 explosion thing. I put it back in.
Oh, God, yeah, it's a terribly ugly plane. It's you know, if you took a Crusader and then beat it with more ugly stick.
That said, I also said that it's a case in which form did not follow function, but it's a very functional attack plane.
Yeah, which it is.
They've got a good record of that in the Navy.
Yeah, it can carry a lot of bombs, about 1,000 rounds of 20mm cannon, which is, you know, fun.
Yeah.
Woo. Ammo.
It's a lot of trucks.
Yeah, it's a lot of dead trucks. Plus, it can haul, you know, a ton of bombs. It's a nice subsonic bomb truck. And actually, the later years of Vietnam would make an appearance with the F-111. The Corsair was very good at that, like, kind of precision bombing mission.
Hmm.
You know, back when precision bombing meant, you know, radar guidance systems on the plane and, you know, follow a little pipper and stay on target.
Circular air probability of, you know, like 500 meters instead of, you know, 5 kilometers.
Interestingly, it's about the systems that the Russians have now. So, you know, they're still relevant. If your name is Vlad. So, you know, alternatively, you could just give us a modern Russian aircraft flight sim, but I think it'd be easier to get all the details right for
the
Vietnam
aircraft. The Russians are notoriously tight-lipped, even about things they don't really care about anymore.
Right.
I've got 50.
Don't get ahead of yourself, buddy, or give the game up. But
well, now you just did.
But you do need to tell us what games you would want to buy if you could.
Well, see, I have a slightly different list than John's. My list includes two games, at least one of which I am likely to get very soon, that do exist in the present world, and then two that I would like to see exist. So I'll start with the one closest to my possession, which is Total Warhammer, and you know, the grim darkness of the fantasy past and everything. Now, see, that's a game that if they had not already made it, I would say it's something I think they ought to make. The Warhammer license and the Total War like setup are so fit to one another that it's kind of a miracle that it took this long to come together. But I would say it's a good thing that it did take that long, because
that's the kind of idea. Well, it's
they've had a long time to work out the flaws in the Total War formula.
Right. And it's also the idea that's so good, you know, the lawyers would clearly get in to torpedo it like U-boats in a convoy.
Yeah. It had to be Games Workshop extending a hand of friendship to the creative assembly.
Right, as opposed to, you know, throttling them with license fees.
Yeah. So there's that one. Next up is Flashpoint Campaign's Red Storm, an innovative take on the Cold War in Western Europe, whose most notable feature is being a turn-based war game whose turns are variable length in terms of real time. So if you're the British and your command and control is terrible, then you know, your turns cover a longer period of time, and you know, the Russians might get to move two or three times to your one. So you get to a real simulation of that, you know, the OODA loop without having to...
What years is that cover?
It's like the late 80s, I think.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so that's due beta.
Yeah, that might be on my list as well of things that I actually buy as opposed to games that I wish could happen.
Yeah. Next up is a Sky Pirates game in the vein of Mount and Blade, which, as I've remarked, is one of the worst game names ever because it always sounds like Mountain Blade.
Some barbarian on a mountain named Conan or something who doesn't want to come down.
We'll call it Zep and Plane. So you have a you have your Zeppelin, which you are managing. You're taking it around the world in search of adventure and probably fighting of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
You get into a battle. You drop down into the cockpit of a plane and dogfight between, you know, your Zeppelin and the other one, or, you know, your Zeppelin in the airfield.
Right.
A classic kind of game in the vein of the Sky Pirate stories.
Yeah, which are splendid and need to be done more with, because who doesn't love pirates and Zeppelins?
Yes.
And the 30s.
Yeah. Actually, fun fact, there, in the First World War, there was actually one recorded instance of air piracy. A prize crew from the German Zeppelin, it was either, I think, L-24 or L-29, one of those two, stopped and boarded a Norwegian schooner in the North Sea and sent it into port under a prize crew. So
yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
See, that's Sky Piracy, and of course, the USS Macon was able to operate small Sparrowhawk fighters as a flying aircraft carrier. The only flying aircraft carrier to date.
Yep.
Take that, anime.
Probably because it's not really a super feasible idea. But
no, the Sparrowhawks were like really tiny and crappy, and compared to something like, I don't know, the Saratoga or Enterprise, which can carry a lot more. So the Macon was huge and could carry five planes, all of five. And, you know, when the Enterprise or Saratoga can carry a good 100-odd planes, that's kind of a tough sell.
Yeah.
They had the problem of, you know, dying in storms, the Zeppelins.
Things we kind of gloss over in our Sky Pirates universe a bit, but not too much.
Yeah. Yeah. Hurricanes are bad, okay?
Yeah. You want to, like, skirt the edges of those if you can. Right. Yeah.
Or, excuse me, the Pacific, so typhoons.
Yeah. He rolled his eyes if you couldn't hear it. Anyway, and finally on my list is what I will refer to as Batman Arkham Jedi. So the Arkham Asylum combat system is well regarded by
everybody.
Pretty much everybody, yeah. Because it flows well, it's easy to pick up, and it's still difficult to do, like, to play really well, which are pretty much the three, like, main goals of any game system.
It also looks really good, right?
Yes.
You look like you know what you're doing.
And that's an important part with lightsaber fighting, because to date, we have not had a game that really captures the magic of fighting with lightsabers.
No.
Which is to say, it has to look like a sword fight, and Jedi Knight, it's fun, I guess, but it's not like, okay, I'm going to lock... I am locked in combat with you, and the first time I touch you, you're dead, because it just wouldn't work.
No, it's more like two guys... It's like two brothers beating each other over the head with Nerf bats.
Or plastic lightsabers, for that matter.
Yes. Well, no, because if I brought plastic lightsabers, they'd always break.
Yeah.
So you take the Nerf bat, and you'd attach it with duct tape to a lightsaber handle.
Ah, there you go. Yeah,
but...
I don't know, we had pretty good luck, me and my friends, with the classic plastic lightsaber. But anyway. So yeah, there's a thing that ought to happen.
Yes. Exactly. And, you know, the lightning bolts Batman gets when someone's about to punch him in the face would actually make even more sense if you had the Force to tell you someone's about to stab you.
Yeah. Which, you know, it's even part of the lore. It's built right in. So get in touch, whoever made Arkham Asylum and so on and so forth. Yeah. Disney's been really big about all these licensed goods. I think you've got a real shot.
Yeah, Disney's much nicer to get licenses from than George ever was.
Huh. I believe that about wraps up games.
Right.
Huh.
Why don't you start the guns? You're the more pedestrian one.
That's true. I never did look up that term.
Oh, well.
Yeah. So the first on my list is the Humble M9 or Beretta 92, depending on who's buying it. Which is a gun with a lot of Christmas pedigree.
That's right.
You may remember your movies, you know, Die Hard and Lethal Weapon. Your Christmas classic action movies, say.
And Jay's undying ambition as a child was to be Martin Riggs.
I don't think that's actually the case, but
it totally was.
Yeah. for the purposes of this podcast, I guess. Anyway, it's a classic pistol. I like Beretta's stuff generally. I like double action hammer fired pistols because I suppose I'm a dinosaur nowadays. But
yep.
Who'd have thunk? I mean, back in the 80s, that's like, you know, it's not a revolver. That's awfully unreliable. Can you trust your semi-auto?
And, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, I don't know, though. I think that was more, in the 80s, it was more a question of really shaking the stigma of the 40s. So in, like, the 40s and 50s, you had a number of early attempts to make a semi-auto workable. And
but they made some autos workable in the 30s. I mean, but now you've got your high power, which is
right, and you've got the 1911, which worked pretty well.
Yeah.
Now, granted,
both being maybe slightly more complicated than they had to be, but doesn't
right.
mean they're
but
not.
They work.
Yeah.
I mean, you could get problems in 1911 if you put hollow points in it and didn't quite make it set up for those. But that's what Smiths are for. But you know, there were a lot of there was a bad stigma they had to shake, which I think probably just derived from the fact that J. Edgar Hoover thought automatics were unbecoming.
Yes. Well, of course, because
Jay old timer, twat.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that was one of the original first crop of Wonder Nines was the Beretta 92, because it took a while. You know, interestingly, you had the one high power design, but nobody really cared about that. And it took really until the late 70s when you have the Beretta 92 in the early 80s and the CZ-75 and the high power Mark III. Again, right, and things just kind of come up. And at that point, you start to get, okay, maybe this double stack idea is good. Because, I mean, let's be honest, more bullets is better than less bullets.
Yes.
Duh.
It's pretty straightforward.
Right.
Anyway, so that's my first one. My second one is the Rising Submachine Gun, the lesser known, not really cousin, but contemporary of the Thompson, at least. A submachine gun most famous for its role in the Second World War and the... The Rising was most famous for the relative disdain in which the troops held it. It was used mainly in the Pacific, and it was a gun built to tight tolerances, and it was not especially forgiving of poor maintenance. All of which are things you don't really want in a combat arm, especially when you're in somewhere humid and salty.
Oh, don't forget all that beach sand.
That too, yeah. Anyway, so although they are mechanically perfectly functional guns, they still have something of a bad rap as being junkers, and
they also don't have any of the it's probably a function of that bad rap. It doesn't have the cool factor
right.
of even a grease gun has some amount of cool factor.
Yeah. But no, you say a Rising, but it was a what now?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, the grease gun, okay, the gun that replaced the Thompson is being lighter and easier to make, and it's lots of fun and goofy, but
Anyway, so the Rising's relative lack of cool factor makes it actually one of the most affordable automatics you can buy today. At about $5,000 or $6,000 for a fully transferable example in good nick.
Right.
And for a .45 submachine gun, that's more than enough for me.
Right. It's also a lot more reliable. Now, technically, a Sten is probably cheaper, but the build quality on a Sten is atrocious.
Right.
And the Rising actually has some build quality.
Right.
Provided you're not dragging it through Iwo Jima.
That was its problem. It had too much build quality.
Yeah, exactly.
It wasn't put together poorly enough to function in bad conditions.
Right. So as long as Jay doesn't, go to gun school with me, where my sadistic friends will drag it through the mud, or, where it doesn't go to Iwo Jima and bury it on the beach, he'll be fine. Right. And he, in fact, hates the beach, so he's going to be A-okay, folks.
that's a lie. Actually, I do quite like the beach, but it's not a good place for guns. Anyway, moving on to the final item on my guns list. Well, what I would really love more than anything else is all the tooling and equipment out of a Royal Ordnance factory of about 1917 vintage.
Right, like Royal Arsenal Woolwich, for example.
Yeah, for instance, where they made 455 Webley ammo, which is as difficult to find as hen's teeth. Now, it is probably even harder. I'm sure you can find some making false hen's teeth, whereas it's difficult even to find 455 snap caps. So,
right.
Yeah, I have a 455 Webley revolver, and I would probably shoot it more often if I could find the ammunition for less than the roughly $1 a pop. Right. I can occasionally find it for at gun shows.
Yep. I mean, yeah, that was one of Indy's guns.
Yep.
Because it was available in Britain and cheap back in the, you know, before they got rid of all their guns.
Yes.
Which totally eliminated all the crime on that island, said no one ever. but now, you know, here in America, it's not a super popular gun, which is unfortunate. And, you know, so you don't have a ton of ammo, and Fiocchi imports it whenever, like, they feel like it, and they're Italian, so
really
that happens basically never.
Hey, Vittorio, do you want to stop having the wine and go make a batch of ammo?
No, more wine. Luigi. And they just have more wine and eat pasta and watch F1 and build awesome shotguns and not actually import that case of ammo that's sitting on a dock in Naples.
It's okay, we're both Italian. We can make fun.
Yeah, we really can.
Not that it would stop us if we weren't, but
certainly not me.
We're better equipped than most.
Yeah, yep, exactly. All right, so I guess that leaves me then.
It does.
All right, three things. Let's have some fun. The first, of course, is a licensed, transferable, fully automatic M16 receiver with the happy switch, the rock and roll lever.
Which is just about those the same as, like, I would like basically anything, any gun I can have in AR-15 upper form.
Yep.
I would like that one. That's right. It's a good listen because it covers just about everything.
That's right. You can do, right, you just need the uppers. You start swapping the uppers. You know, you want 300 blackout, 5.56, 7.62, 39.
Do you have even like your 9mm carbine?
Yep, yeah. Exactly, right? Click, there it is, boom, carbine.
Probably even takes Glock mags.
No, it doesn't. No, you need a different, those actually require a different lower to hold them because of the Glock angle. There is, like, basically you can convert Uzi mags to fit in, like,
probably you could put some sort of, like, adapter.
You probably could make an adapter to work there. Yeah. I'd have to look and see if those were a thing. But yeah, you can do almost anything with it. That would be super cool. There's a bunch of other things I'd probably do. I'd probably end up eventually putting together,
ooh, like... I've got a great idea for a 9mm upper that takes Glock mags. Side loading.
Yeah, there you go. I'll look like a stormtrooper. It'd be great.
It's like in the grand tradition of all the British submachine guns that fired 9mm.
Right, yeah. Right. The Sten and the Sterling, which is much better than the Sten. But yeah, that's one of those things on my list that I'd actually like to buy. Not quite as affordable as a Rising, but still not terrible, because there are a good number of them out there on the registered transferable list.
And I will grant that it is a lot more versatile in the long run.
Right. Because you can actually use it. I would also like to take it to one of those two-gun matches we go to. Just for kicks and giggles. Yeah, exactly. Just for kicks and giggles with the big comp I have that makes it seem like a 308, except, you know, roaring full auto 308, which would be terrifying. But, you know, that's half the fun, right?
Yeah.
So that's the first thing on the list. That's probably like a someday savings goal eventually.
If I had the money for a Rising, I think I would totally take that to a two-gun match.
Yeah.
Pistol caliber carbine,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you need like a 45 pistol to go with it.
Well, that's 1911 in, like, you know, government condition.
Right, yeah, like a beat-up USGI or a USGI clone 1911 would be perfect.
I'll take it to gun school, drag it from the mud some.
Oh, there you go, exactly. Well, the 1911 work okay. The Rising, maybe not.
Yeah, just the 1911,
Exactly. Yeah, no, pistol school, yeah, that'd work for you. So, second item on my list, I would love a tracking point set up. Right now, that's on my Christmas wish list here, rather than me actually go getting it. Mostly because right now I live in Pennsylvania and I get maybe 200 yards sight line if I'm really lucky. And also just, I don't think it's quite worth the squeeze yet. It looks super cool, but I don't do a ton of long range shooting against a lot of moving targets.
Yeah. See, it's nifty. It's just that it's a wish list item more than I'm going to buy item because it doesn't have the fun practical kind of
use. Yeah. So something like a full auto, like an automatic weapon. Yeah, that's super fun.
Laugh all the way from the bank.
Right.
Both for the acquisition cost and the ammo defeated.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's just, you know, that, you know, the Hank Scorpio. Yeah. Brap. Yeah. Or
if you want to kill someone on your way up, that'd be great.
Exactly. You know, say hello to my lethal friend. So that would be something I think would be really cool in terms of, like, kind of fun things. And then the third thing on my list, the most exotic and most fun, a pig. The M60 pig, of course, not an actual animal, though, you know, the pigs are delicious. Yes. Bacon, pork chops.
You usually want those. It's much easier when they're pre-processed for you.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, a lot less trouble. But no, the M60, I think, would be just awesome, super fun. It's got that Vietnam-era cachet, mm-hmm. you know, Rambo. And then I'd spend a lot of time learning to fire it from the hip, like Rambo. And just, you know, have all the fun.
I have noticed something about you relative to Arnie.
Yeah, I'm a lot, like, half the mass. Yeah. I probably have to, like, get a gym membership to go with it. But, you know, if I'm buying an M60 at what, $80,000? I can afford a freaking gym membership and a trainer.
Yeah, the personal trainer. I want to look like Arnold.
Okay, I need to carry this stupid thing. So, yeah, all right, and I can afford a lot of protein, too, at that point.
You can probably afford Arnold.
Yeah, I know, right? Just have Arnold be my trainer. That'd be freaking awesome. All right, so get Arnold as a trainer to go with my M60, which actually Arnold used as well in the movie Commando. Mm-hmm. Great movie. Yeah. Lots of fun.
He's not doing very much these days.
No, he isn't. He's just, actually, I think he's just like living it up.
Well, he's in a movie with Jackie Chan, actually.
Yeah.
Which, awesome. Probably a must-watch recommendation from the soapbox. I mean,
That checks like all the boxes for us in terms of awesome people and goofy fun.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there you go. Three wonderful things for me. One achievable, one sort of kind of achievable, one, oh, damn, I'm going to need to win a lottery, aren't I?
Yep.
Oh, well, that's how the cookie crumbles.
Yep.
So let's move on to defense topics. Now, again, we have, a bit on the soapbox where we, you know, say, well, gee, if we were going to buy things, what would we buy? And we usually, like, make rules for ourselves where it has to be things that are in production right now.
Let's go over the nations, too, before we
Certainly.
Dive in, yeah.
Certainly.
That does somewhat inform our choices.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, yeah, I represent the fictional Central American nation of Luxembourg, which is more or less Panama, except with, like, Hong Kong kind of wealth. And so it's as a Central American country, it's big on naval power and projecting things. And as a Central American country, it's big on fighting drug lords.
Right.
Yes.
Right, and Brazil.
Yes.
Because you hate Brazil.
Yes. Somehow. John, of course, heads up the Burgundian Defense Ministry, Ministry of Burgundy.
Which is kind of this weird, like, France, if it was still 1910.
And France, if it was still 1910, and in the same place as Poland.
Right, exactly. slightly north of Poland. But yeah, that's it, right? So we generally are absolutely paranoid about Russia. We are all militaristic because that's fun, and because nobody else in Europe is doing that these days, and they're lame. We're big on the NATO membership, and I tend to do the whole, I'm big on mechanized forces and air power when I can use that to back up my mechanized forces.
Yep. So yeah, we ordinarily set ourselves rules, like John was saying, that we have to buy things in production, but we figured today we would...
And we also have to buy things that are not only in production...
And available.
Exactly, right, yeah. On the market. Someone is willing to sell you them.
Right. But today we decided to cut loose a little bit and take the entire list of possible, you know, even like possible and, of unpurchasable and even as far as possible and never even really built.
Right, that's right. If it was a thing that was a prototype somewhere, it's now fair game, one night only.
Yep. We can buy whatever we want. So
that's right. Let's get the party started, buddy. Make it rain. What you got on your list?
All right. So number one, I wrote it down as the K-50 Bolshoi Modernizatsii plus BIS-2. So the K-50, I'm a big fan of, as you may know if you've read the Soapbox article, which I'm sure we'll link in the further reading. Mm-hmm. If I'm not too lazy, given that it's almost Christmas, and this is really, to be honest, a pretty slapdash episode.
Yeah, this is
so great. It may or may not be in the further reading section. But I'm a big fan of the helicopter, of the single-seat helicopter concept, too, even though that hasn't really found wide adoption in the world today.
Read, no one likes this idea. Who isn't named Jin?
Yes, which probably means that I'm wrong, but I do like the idea that your standard unit is the two-ship helicopter thing. But that's another topic from the blog post. Anyway, so this K-50 is not your standard daylight K-50 with no sensors besides a TV system. You've got probably, you know, call it fancy, like fancy cockpit displays, a low light TV system, possibly even thermal if I'm feeling fancy.
Go thermal, dude.
Option for radar. I'm happy with the missile fit generally. So yeah, that's like a K-50 for the future. Something you can trust to send in with all those lovely Russian rockets into a mountain valley high in the central part of your country to bust up the base run by the drug lords.
Right. Or, you know, those night infiltrating Brazilian leopard ones.
That's a good one too, yeah. Or, like, for night infiltration into Brazil to get the leopard ones before they get to us. The Russians do like helicopter deep strikes, although I think they've kind of gone away from that when they realized it didn't work.
Well, yeah, because, see, the U.S. Army, like, stole the page from them about the helicopter deep strikes and tried it, and then it epic failed. And I think the Russians are at least wise enough to say, you know...
Perhaps it was a bad idea.
Perhaps you listen to Americans trying idea for us.
Yes. This was our plan all along. The stupid Americans would try it, they would see it does not work, and we were never planning to do it in the first place.
That's right. It didn't work for us in Iraqi freedom with Apaches. I really doubt it's going to work for anybody anywhere. Aside from, like, really, really particular special conditions in general, I don't think it's something...
Well, I suppose it's... The question then comes to whether, like, late 80s Russian network helicopter systems were better than American ones at the time. And I think they may have been, Apaches.
Yes, but, I mean, this was tried in 2004 by Apaches, like, the D-model sans radar.
Yeah. Clearly you need the radar, too.
Yeah.
To make it work.
Yeah, because that was
anywho, yeah. So number two on my list, Luxembourg being a naval power as well, is plans for the littoral combat ship. My favorite...
Little crappy ships?
Yes, that's the one. But the thing is, if I had the plans, I could make them less crappy.
You think you could make them less crappy?
Less crappy ships.
Oh, great. Here we go.
Okay, so I think I'd probably want...
Hey, what's Spanish for white elephant?
I don't know. Blanco Elefanto.
There you go. We're going to call it that. Class.
Anyway, so, although I like the lines of the trimaran better, I do think the standard hull is a better idea. So we'll take the plans for that. We'll take out the giant propulsion plant that, you know, pushes them to whatever, like 40-some knots, which is really ridiculous amounts of speed.
Still can't outrun a missile.
Well, if you're outrunning your rigid hulled inflatables, you're probably going too fast for, like, a surface warship. So... We'll take that out with the space we've hopefully saved from, you know, downsizing to, you know, like 4 turbines instead of 12 or whatever.
Yeah.
We'll put in a hull sonar because, you know, those are both in kind of the same area, like the bottom of the ship.
Yeah, except the hull sonar's up front.
Well, yeah.
And the turbines are not.
Whatever. I mean, it doesn't have to be up front. It's not a requirement.
Yeah, it does. You want it away from the things that make noise in the water? You know, the props?
Anyway,
screws,
we've seen cutaways to the LCS. There's not much up front either. So we'll use the weight savings to put in the hull sonar and the towed array, both of which are important for, you know, frigate size shift.
Right, because you probably want it to be able to fight submarines.
Yeah.
Not many other points.
I don't know, I haven't looked at a cutaway of the Freedoms or the
Freedom class.
Yeah, I haven't looked
Freedom
at
a, from being able to do anything on the open ocean.
I haven't looked at a cutaway of them lately, but I think there's room for a VLS up front somewhere near the gun. Not a big one, but again, it's supposed to be a cheap little frigate, so it doesn't need much in the way of that.
Lies. Anyway, continue.
Anyway, yeah. John, of course, is a fan of more missiles, no matter what they're...
Missiles. I mean, my frigate of choice is 48 Mark 41 tubes.
Yep.
Which is as many as a Daring-class ship, and most of those are quad-packed.
Yeah.
Your nominal load, quad-packs most of those with Sea Sparrows.
Yeah. Anyway, so...
Yeah.
Probably, like, slap on some box launchers for a proper anti-ship missile, because, again, that's a capability you kind of want out of your
thing. And, like, by proper anti-ship missiles, the ones they have now are none, so, yes. You know, almost anything
is a step up.
Yeah.
The naval strike missile comes in a nice box that takes very little deck footprint and is made basically to be bolted onto whatever flat surface you could find, or probably even, like, not a flat surface.
Yeah, probably.
As long as you, like, adjust the legs some to get it, like, the right orientation. Anyway, so you get some anti-ship capability, you get some anti-submarine capability you didn't have before. I actually have no complaints about the flight deck, because that's the one thing they did right on those. They may even be too big.
I think they might be too big.
Maybe on the Independence they're big, but the Freedom's a little bit more traditional in terms of size and shape.
Yeah.
So. Anyway, so that about covers what I would do to make it better and worth buying, but I would need the plans for that, so that's on my list.
Yep.
Finally, I'd love to get the Russians to restart the Akula production line.
The Akula is a wonderfully large and, like, ludicrous boat, so I'm finally happy with something you're buying.
Yes. I think we should probably clarify that we're not talking about what we Westerners call the Akula. We're talking about what the Russians call the Akula, which is what we call the Typhoon.
Right.
They're enormous, like, double main pressure hull.
Right, because they took to make a bigger boomer, they took two of the pressure hulls from the other boomer they built, the Delta class, welded them together, and then put a big skin around the whole thing.
Yes. So they are really enormous submarines, I think, the largest ever built.
Right, and if you see Hunt for Red October, you know what we're talking about.
Right.
Go watch that movie, it's awesome. But not a Christmas movie.
I don't really believe so much in dispersing my nuclear deterrent all that much. I figure I have two of them, they can cover most of the world between them. And I don't see the... Well, crew swapping like you do to keep things at sea. And,
yeah.
No. Maybe by three, so we can have one undergoing refit in a given
right.
time.
I mean, they are Russian subs.
So you probably will need that.
A lot.
John doesn't like the liquid-fueled missiles, but I said we'll just design other missiles to go in those things, because missiles are easy. Even North Korea can build missiles.
And some of the time. Liquid-fueled missiles? What the hell is this? 1955?
Well, how many does a Typhoon carry? They don't all have to work.
It has 20 tubes, dude.
Yeah, so...
For shitty Russian liquid-fueled missiles.
So yeah, we'll put in 20 better things. So like, 15 of them work? Then how many warheads? How many warheads per missile?
That depends on the missile.
Yeah, we'll call it like, 8? Biggish ones. They are big tubes, they're...
Oh, yeah.
Again, because it's a gigantic submarine. They're liquid-fueled missiles. Although liquid fuel is maybe not the smartest idea. They are really gigantic.
No, interestingly, so liquid fuel is actually easier for a missile it's easier for a missile in terms of throw weight, which is usually the first thing you think of when you think of missile, is that you have a bunch of warheads and you would like to throw them somewhere and blow up some jerks because you hate them or because, they looked at you funny or whatever. Liquid fuels tend to be, all kinds of things like corrosive, hazardous. And so the problem is, and this is less of an issue for a submarine, but it's still a safety risk. You can't store the missile with fuel in it. You have to fuel the missiles before launch. Now a submarine doesn't have to worry about getting bombed before it can fire the missiles off, but you do have this, safety problem of putting the explosive, hypergolic, usually nasty shit into the missile. In a, pump system that who knows when the last time you tested this was. Mm-hmm. It worked well and Brezhnev was looking under the hull, but that was 20 years ago.
Well, see, that's more an indictment of the Russian Navy, the Soviet Navy than the...
They finally got solid fuel missiles for the new Bulava class, but they don't work.
Yes.
They have a tendency to, explode.
Yeah. Anyway.
I hear that's bad.
Throw weight and range are kind of competing concerns, too, and...
Yeah.
It's not as big a deal for submarines.
Could you fit Tridents in them? Because Tridents work.
That's a good question.
I mean, and Tridents have a ridiculous throw weight.
Well, you start talking about your stuff and I'll look that up.
All right. So, yeah, you look up the size of the Trident and how it compares to whatever the hell they put on the Akulas. And I'll talk about my three. All right. Four. Excuse me.
Yes.
Four. So, first on, because we said, 10, we get a grab bag and I put it here on defense. First item, because again, I love air power. And the only thing I like more than air power is a good mechanized force, but, most of the mechanized stuff in the world is stuff that you can buy a good example of. There's plenty of great tanks that are on the market, happy to sell. The Leopard 2, the Abrams, the K2 out of Korea. Just all kinds of great things on the market. IFVs, that's nicely handled. The CV-90, the Puma, all kinds of good things there. Bombers, though, nobody sells a heavy bomber. So let's get us a heavy bomber, and if we're
nobody has the U.S. wants a heavy bomber.
Exactly, Russians want a heavy bomber. Yeah. They got that blackjack thing.
Yeah, I suppose that's true.
Blackjack.
It's not exactly the same kind of heavy bomber though. That one's like we want to defend our coastline from shipping, so we'll make this gigantic supersonic bomber that can drop a bunch of stuff.
Right. Well, I mean, it's like a B-1, except
it is. It's not like a super practical. Super practical. Heavy bomber. I'm going to drop a bunch of bombs on Johnny Jihadi down there.
Exactly. That's okay, though. Well, I mean, you got to fight the wars you got and get the use out of the thing, the army you have.
I suppose that's true.
So, if we're going for a heavy bomber, go big and go home, right? Because everything in the store is for sale. So, the obvious choice, the Northrop B-2A Spirit. Because it is the stealthiest plane in the world. You cannot find it, not even with your vaunted, still shitty, long-wave radars.
Oh, point of order.
Yeah, L-band this and...
No, this... Well, let's go back a second. I'm doing my research as John is talking, as I often do, and I have here the entry for the R-39, which was carried on board Typhoon class submarines, and it's an 84 metric ton missile with a length of 53 feet and diameter of 7.9 feet, 10 warheads, and a three-stage solid fuel rocket.
Oh, well, there you go. The Russians did something, right?
Yep.
That, no, though that actually makes the Pulev even less explainable, because then why do they keep blowing up? You got this working once before.
Well, presumably, they got it working once before, and they like lost that expertise because, you know, we'll just keep these submarines around forever.
You know what the problem could have been? End of the Cold War, those Russian rocket scientists want to go someplace that...
We'll pay them.
Money.
Yeah.
Like, anywhere but there.
used to work for Russian nuclear missile program. I'm now senior engineer at SpaceX.
Drive fancy car. Anyway, back to the B-2.
It's Tesla, all electric.
Well, yeah, they love Tesla being, you know, Eastern European. So the B-2, you can't see it, except unless it's daytime and it's an air show. But you can't see it on radar. You can't see it on your fancy infrared search and track. The B-2 does not care what integrated air defense system you have. It will fly right past it, laugh at you, and then drop a bomb on your head. Perfect. Why would you want anything that isn't a B-2? It's got massive range. It has mid-air refueling, relatively high-tech, but not, you know, too crazy, and can support a wide variety of bombs and missiles.
Yep.
It's perfect.
And I should note that in-air refueling and super long range aren't just, you know, paper capabilities. It's, you know...
No, it's done it.
Ordinarily, they fly their missions from bases in the continental U.S. because it's more convenient than flying somewhere
else. I think they're based in Missouri,
yeah.
And they don't really feel like moving the planes, so they fly to Iraq or whatever, blow up Saddam's shit, and come home.
All right, like a 24, 30-hour mission.
Just, yeah, that's right. Well, I mean, you know, it's reasonably roomy because it is, you know, a big-ass flying wing bomber.
Yeah. So you've got, like, you know, the cabin in the back with the relief pilot.
Yeah, you know, and you can put, like, the cot, and, you know, you got a toilet back there and a little microwave for food, you know. I mean, it's a long mission. But, you know, what else are you going to do?
Nicer than our first RV.
Exactly, right? I mean, it's also like the kind of thing where you can pretty much relax. I mean, because nothing can hit you. You know, you slip in at night. There's a bunch of radars going off. And what's that? Oh, something blew up.
Yeah. All right.
Damn it. So that's item one. Item two, you knew this was on the list. The Lockheed Martin F-22A Raptor. Because, duh. I mean, just how could you not get a Raptor? I don't know. Jay doesn't like fighters, but
I mean, I don't have a need for fighters, really. I mean, I'm not facing off against the Russian bear.
Exactly, right.
I'm facing off against the Brazilians, who, you know, are most known for their partying as opposed to their air force.
And those like little Embraer things that like you get crammed in on shitty short haul flights. And they're terrible. Which they all need to be shot down. So
they do make fascinating little. Like counterterrorism planes, which I might have bought if I weren't so anti-Brazilian in this fictional universe.
Exactly.
Anyway, all I need for that is Gripens.
Yeah. Well, yes, but the greatest dogfighter in the world is the Raptor.
Yes.
Like, by far. Its record in training is hilariously one-sided. You have wonderful reports from aggressor F-16 pilots who do nothing but dogfighting, so they're pretty good at it, saying the Raptor is the most annoying thing in the world to do an exercise with because you can see the plane and your stupid radar still will not give you a missile lock on the damn thing. They're fantastic. They will shoot you before you figured out that they're trying to kill you. And they can engage at will because they have massive engines and can supercruise... Lots of other things can supercruise, but they supercruise better than everybody else. Mm-hmm. They just have so much engine power and so much range. It's the kind of thing where, well, we really don't need to improve the AMRAAM more because the Raptor flies faster and higher than everybody else, and that'll make the AMRAAM perform better because we're throwing it from a higher speed and higher altitude.
Mm-hmm.
And then it dives down on you and you die. And if the Raptor doesn't like the look of things, that's okay. It leaves. Because that's the other thing, too, is it will leave. And you can't really catch up to it because you'd also have to find it, which you can't do because it's stealthy.
Well, maybe not quite as much from the tail as far as infrared goes, but that's...
Oh, well, yeah, but like the ranges you're talking about.
Yeah. Like, by the time they realize they want to turn around, it's still going to be very hard for you to, you know...
Yep, because they see you first.
To find them.
Right.
To realize that you should be looking for them, to find them, then to run them down, to make your sprint while they're just doing their happy little super cruise away.
Right, because they can also light their burners, and they can super cruise like Mach 1.5, and really, for basically, function as long as they want, and you can't. So, yeah, that's the thing, right, because they can see you first because of their stealth and their phenomenal radar. They can say, oh, you know, I'm Winchester, so I'm just going to go home now and get more missiles. And you're all like, what Raptors? So conceivably, you might be able to run them down if you were in a MiG-31 that had, like, God's view of the battlefield. But
or like maybe a long-wave radar guidance.
Maybe.
Something to get you close. Like,
you'd have to get, like, really, really close. And you'd also need, like, the long wave on the ground
to cue
the plane and say there's something that way.
And you can get close. The MiG-31's got an Erst, doesn't it? Or does it? I think it does.
Yeah, well, again, you still have the problem with the Erst range.
Yeah.
Right. And again, we're looking at the problem of the Raptor, like, choosing to disengage early.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't like look of things, or because it's out of missiles, or it just doesn't feel like coming out to play today, right? And that's, see, it's not just all of the massive problems of finding the damn stealth thing, it's also the fact that it sees you first, so it gets the initiative. It just plays more OODA loop games while you're sitting there, mm-hmm. stuck. But yeah, the Raptor, it's awesome. I love them. One of my favorite planes. I've seen them at two air shows now, and always a crowd pleaser. They are lots of fun. They just look cool.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah,
everyone likes him.
Oh yeah, no. Also, the you know, they're the one plane at the air show that has like all of the, you know, heavily armed guards.
No closer.
Yeah, do not mess with the Raptor. Do not get close to the Raptor. Do not touch the Raptor.
Do not taunt the Raptor.
No.
Do not stare directly at the Raptor.
Nope. Do not make eye contact. Do not make prolonged eye contact with the Raptor. All right, so that's number two. Nothing really too shocking there. But let's get to land power. So anyway, like I was saying, tanks. I've got tons of articles on the soapbox about tanks, but there's lots of good choices. And there's lots of good choices for an infantry fighting vehicle. Something that's a little... There are good choices for self-propelled howitzers. However, there was a canceled one that was better. And that is the XM-2001 Crusader.
It's got an X, ladies and gentlemen. He's gone into like the esoteric now.
That's right. Experimental. The XM-2001 Crusader and the XM and its companion, the XM-2002 armored reloading vehicle, were designed in the 90s as a replacement for the M-109 howitzer. They were canceled thanks to Donald Rumsfeld as a result of the Iraq War. Basically, the problem was the XM-2001 family was designed to be something, you know, kind of big. For, you know, a Cold War gone hot scenario. And then, well, they wanted to do more of a lighter force in the late 90s after the Russians embarrassed them and, you know, with that little dash to the airport. So everything had to go light, which meant they had to re-engineer the program, which meant it started getting really expensive because you redesigned it. And then, well, Rumsfeld had that Iraq War and he wanted to go, you know, play with toys in the desert and not get new stuff. So that program got canceled, which is a shame because it is the scariest howitzer in the world. The Crusader was designed around two principles. One, crew safety, the safest howitzer.
That's important.
And yes, it is. Because, I mean, remember, you have a ton of explosives to propellant and the shells. And the Crusader, unlike every other gun in the world, has its crew completely isolated from the ammunition supply.
Hmm.
And it has a big one. It has a big ammunition supply. It's about, I think, 60 rounds, plus modular propellant charges and fuses. And all of that stuff is handled mechanically and automatically in the back. And the crew sit in their own little module and have a computer to handle all the fire control. And the reloader, the XM-2002, can come up and dock with the Crusader and just resupply rounds and propellant charges. And again, without crew having... Again, that's all handled automatically. So you don't have to get out of the vehicle... And you're not, and in the event you get hit by a bomb or a missile or something.
Counter battery fire.
Exactly. Yeah, the ammo's going to cook off, but, you know, the crew gets to live.
Mm-hmm.
And the vehicle's repairable. You know, almost anything can be repaired. We saw this in the Eastern Front in World War II, but the crews are what's important, especially yes. a well-trained, non-conscript crew.
Right.
So the Crusader gets...
That sounds like Americans to me, John.
Exactly. The Crusader takes page out of the M1 Abrams book, you know, just like T-14, really,
mm-hmm.
And isolates the crew and the ammo supply. Which is great. So that's the first thing it does. The second thing it does is the Crusader can sustain fire better than any other artillery system in the world. And this is because, well, one, all of the handling of shells and propellant is completely automatic. And two, it has a liquid-cooled gun.
Hmm.
So the main gun has a, you know, basically a glycol jacket, you know, for your water ethanol mixture. Yeah. And then there's,
so it does not freeze in the Russian winter.
Exactly. And then there's heat exchangers back in the turret to vent the waste heat as all this stuff's pumped out. So it's, you know, like your car radiator, but for the gun. Why would you want this? So that you can fire all 60 rounds in about 4 minutes.
It's a pretty good rate of fire.
Yeah, right. And it's the kind of thing where, yeah, a lot of
before,
other guns...
Before the echoes from the first shell going off die down, the second one's there.
That's right. Yeah, no, you can really pound things heavy. Some other guns can come close to the rate of fire Crusader could... but nobody can sustain it like Crusader. Mm-hmm. Nobody can just keep up.
Can empty the magazine at that speed.
Right, and yeah. Nobody can empty their magazine. Well, no, nobody can read a magazine that big at that speed. Right, there's some other... the Swedish Archer system comes actually really close to Crusader's rate of fire, but that's a wheeled vehicle. It has a much smaller magazine, and if you were able to deal with the supply problems, it can't handle the heat of a long, sustained bombardment like mm-hmm. Crusader can. Really cool feature. I also really like the armored resupply vehicle. That's cool. That's you know, a lot of problems avoided with resupply. And again, a lot of counter battery fire problems you'd expect come from all these crews standing around outside or ammo like piled next to the gun.
Also problematic.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's a big like 55 odd metric ton monster. It's loaded with composite armor. This thing was a beast, and it's a real shame it's canceled. In my world, though, I get to have one. Or more than one. Lots of them. Yes, lots of them. Because, batteries hate guns, right? Yep. So we need 8 of these damn things per battery, per, however many batteries we have.
Call it 100.
Oh, yeah. Load them up. All right. So that covers that. Really cool artillery. I haven't used my fourth pick yet.
Yeah,
my
extra pick. Final item of the night.
So we're going to cover that now. And this one's a little more esoteric, but that's okay.
Even more esoteric.
Yeah. A little way exoteric. The Northrop Grumman E-10 MC-2A.
That sounds like a World War II Navy designation.
It really does, right? Oh, my God. That is just so blah. But basically, the idea here was the U.S. Air Force wanted to, the U.S. Air Force pioneered AWACS, or Airborne Early Warning and Control Systems, in the E-3 Sentry. And they also pioneered airborne ground surveillance aircraft. Basically E-8 JSTARS, which is you get a big side scan radar and that can do synthetic imaging and ground moving target.
Then you synthetically image stuff.
That's right. You point at the ground and hey, look. And the idea with both of these is you get more information than the other guy. So with the AWACS, you can see all the planes. You have this big thing, like you put your primary emitting radar back in a place where you have planes, between it and the enemy. And you give your planes massive eye in the sky, big bonus to intel. Mm-hmm. Same idea with the JSTARS. You see whatever. You can't really hide from a JSTARS when you're on the ground. Other than like by being in a building.
Or behind terrain.
Right, yeah. If you can
Which is hard to do.
Terrain mask is hard because it's high. And the radar is so powerful. And again, right, so these are both really cool capabilities to have. And you can actually see what happens when you don't have them. If you look at the Franco-British campaign in Libya, one of the things they ended up needing from America was JSTARS and a lot of electronic support. Because it's just something they've gotten so used to from coalition fighting with America, where America brings all the cool toys.
Tell me, Monsieur Brown, do you have JSTARS?
Exactly. And the answer is no, mate. I don't.
We don't have JSTARS. Perhaps we should ask the Americans for some of their JSTARS.
Exactly. And that's because it just gives you so much more information on the battlefield. And it just really blows that fog of war away. Like an old strategy game where you type in the cheat. I forget what some of the cheats were. Yeah, exactly. No fog. And bam, hey, I can see everything. Yep. This is so much better than not being able to see stuff.
You can even play your way through that distinction in Falcon 4.
Yep.
You'll occasionally get the sunset call from the AWACS, the JSTARS, as you're going.
It's the saddest moment.
So they're going off station, and there's like a half hour gap, and you're like, I'm completely blind. I don't know what's coming.
This sucks. Yeah. So of course the AWACS, the E-3 Sentry, is a mechanical, like a traditional mechanically scanned array. JSTARS is I think it's passive, but it's only passive, and it's kind of an older early 90s passive. Also, both of them are built on 707 based airframes.
We can do better.
Yes, we can. 707 is no longer in production. It's been out of production for years. It uses old crappy engines. The spare parts are hard to come by, and what if some airline company like Boeing built a modern wide body?
Gee, John, I wonder if they have.
Yes.
And you know what else was kind of interesting?
Yeah.
Just like loiter time. You know how those are like turbojets on those old 707s? Perhaps put turbofans on this
right.
one. Probably stay in there a lot longer.
Yes, and we could do 2 instead of 4, which would reduce the amount of maintenance time because 2 new turbojets from GE or Pratt & Whitney turbofans from GE or Pratt & Whitney are going to be a lot less maintenance intensive than 4 bloody turbojets. Or even the...
They're like 1957.
I know, right? God. So that would be so much better. And... the idea with the E10 was, let's do exactly that. Let's get new radars, new active electronically scanned array radars. And they had a bunch of different ideas about having one version that had air, one that had ground, maybe both. There was a lot of discussion about this. Both on the same plane seems a little, you know, busy to me, but I don't know. And you also have a really enormous airframe because we use 767 bodies. The 767 is a great airframe. Mm. It's in production. It's widely used by airlines. Spare parts are easy to come by. Train mechanics are also easy to come by. And it's pretty freaking big.
Also, it's tested.
Yes, that's right. You know, this is something that's tested. You basically just have to hang the radars on the damn thing and call it a day. And, of course, it got canceled. Ask me why. It would be because of the Iraq War, kids.
Yeah.
Again...
Well, we've already shot down the planes ordering this new AWACS thing.
Right. Again, I don't think that it was too... that the budget problem was really too... in trouble. I mean, there were some questions, but Northrop had a really nice plan about integrating the radar with Boeing, and again, they had the version with the AWACS Sky Search radar replacement, and then the JSTARS replacement, and then maybe phase three, we're going to either put those together, or maybe we'll do something with extra EW suite, mm-hmm. But they had a really nice stage plan, and it just didn't go anywhere, and the Air Force said thanks, but no thanks, because they're stupid.
Yeah. Let me, as we wrap this episode up, describe like the standard procurement process since about, like, I don't know, 1995 or so.
Yep.
So we come up with this great idea for a project.
Yes.
We put this project out for competitive bids.
Right.
We pick a winner.
Yes.
We add requirements.
Yes.
We add more requirements.
We change requirements.
We add more requirements.
Yep.
The project is predictably behind schedule. Yep. And over budget.
Yep.
The test results initially are promising.
Yes.
Then we cancel it because it's expensive and behind schedule.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. And it's really like a shame because you need to like actually lock the requirements in. Because a lot of these things, if you start changing the requirements, how can you blame the contractor for, you know, being behind and over budget when they have to change substantial portions of the design?
I think this will make a good very special episode sometime next year. Like, we'll identify these problems we see with procurement today.
Yep.
Then we'll, you'll find projects that illustrate each of those things.
Yeah.
Then we'll submit our modest proposal for how to do it better.
Right.
Yes.
And I think, yeah, there's a lot of problems. Well, the other thing too, though, is with something big, like a big externality, like the Iraq War.
Yeah.
You get a lot of projects that were canceled that really didn't have any reason to be canceled other than we need the money.
Yeah.
So the E-10 was a little over budget, but not bad. It got nuked. Actually, I think the saddest one was AGM-169.
Yeah.
There's a soapbox post about it. That one was really, really cool and actually on time and on budget because some idiot hadn't changed the requirements a whole bunch.
Well, they pretty much made the ridiculous requirement at the beginning. Like, yeah. It should have three seekers.
Yeah, it should have three seekers in one module, which somehow they pulled it off.
Yeah, and it worked. And then it got canceled.
And I'm like, what are you doing, you morons?
Yeah. Anyway, that about wraps it up for this episode and indeed for 2016.
That's right.
Over the course of this year, we've released 10 episodes at about an hour each. So in those 10 hours, you could have gotten yourself, what, like 20% of the way to your private pilot's ticket?
Exactly.
You could have done like a lot of stuff with that time that would have been better spent than spending it with us. But nevertheless, we appreciate it.
Yeah, we do. We thank you. You silly person.
Yes. So the Crossbox Podcast is produced by my co-host John and me, Jay, and is brought to you by ManyWords Press online at manywords.press. Our theme music today is Christmas Rumble by Jay Slater of manywords.press, which is based off of Royal Rumble by Jay, manofourmusicbox.com. Both are available under the terms of the Creative Commons Attribution License. You can keep up with us, the Crossbox contributors, between podcasts at soapbox.manywords.press. We'd like to say Merry Christmas and have a Happy New Year. We'll see you in 2017.
Merry Christmas, everybody.